We have a new soundboard and we have a new mic. Is that better? Is that better? I see no response. Is that better? We are in chapter 31 of the book of Genesis, and I made a few comments about the opening three verses. I'd like to read them again. So we begin at verse 1 of chapter 31. And he heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said to them, I see in your father's countenance that it is not toward me as before. But the God of my father hath been with me, and you know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, The speckled shall be thy wages, then all the sheep bear speckled. And if he said thus, The ringstraked shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle or the sheep ringstraked. Thus God hath taken away the sheep of your father and given them unto me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the sheep were ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, Here am I. He said, Lift up now thine eyes, and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle, the sheep, are ring-straked, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise and get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? I have read the first 14 verses of the 31st chapter of the book of Genesis. At this point in the life of Jacob, a number of things have happened. He has exploited Laban with all the strength he has, and he has become very wealthy. He is now a very rich man. In fact, everything he has touched has turned to money. And he has become the leading citizen in the city of Haran. He's on the city council. He is an advisor to the mayor. People are talking to him about being governor. He drives a big Mercedes. He smokes a black cigar. He wears the best cologne. And his wives are needling him to steal as much more as he can from their father. But the whole family is mad at him. And the business is going bad. And so he has decided that probably it's time for him to go. Which brings us to verse 4. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. And he said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me, and you know that with all my power I have served your father. There's an interesting observation to make about these two verses. First of all, he continues to mention the God of my father. Please note that Jacob at this juncture in his life is still relying upon the benevolence of the God of his father. The God of his father has not become his God yet. That is going to happen when he wrestles with the angel at Peniel. But now, so far, he is still depending upon the God of his father, who had not become very personal to him. But he knows that his father's God has been good to him in spite of what he's done. And so he reminds his wives that the God of his father has blessed him in spite of what their father had done to him, which is a kind of reference to the fact that they were serving a different God. They were not serving the God of his father, Jehovah, Elohim, but they were serving Nana, the moon god of the Ur of the Chaldees, the Mesopotamian people. So my God, even though I don't know him personally, has been good to me, and he has been much better to me than Nana, the moon god of Mesopotamia, the god of your father, has been to him or to me. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. Can you believe this? Can you believe that Jacob is complaining because of the way Laban has treated him, when Jacob has treated Laban the same way? It's a case of the pot calling the kettle black, isn't it? He's changed my wages 10 times. Now, we have no specific reference to those 10 changes in the Bible. 10 simply means a number of times, and it simply indicates to us that the relationship between the two of them had not been good from the very beginning, and that his father-in-law had treated him wrongly in the way he had paid him for his services to that father-in-law. When I read these verses, I am reminded of one of my favorite characters. You probably know him. His name is Dagwood Bumstead, and I read the newspaper, the comics, every morning. I hope you read the comics. If you don't, you're a very depressed person, because the world is so depressed about the only bright spot in the morning is the comics. Read the comics. They're good for you. And I have been reading Dagwood and Blondie for at least 60 years, and during those 60 years, Dagwood is constantly complaining to Mr. Dithers, his boss, because he doesn't pay him enough money. And Mr. Dithers is always promising him something, but he never seems to get it. Always asking, sometimes being kicked out the door and sometimes slapped out of his chair, but he always gets up and dusts himself off and begins again. And I wonder, how long, Dagwood, can you take this? You have been taking it now for 60 years. Interesting thing about that comic strip, however, is that he is 60 years older now, but he doesn't look any older than he did when he started working for Mr. Dithers. You have changed my wages 10 times, but God has not suffered him to hurt me. Well, God is a sovereign God, isn't he? God takes care of us when we even don't know how to take care of ourselves. And I think we need to note here that there is an imperative suggestion made in these verses, and that is that Jacob has succeeded because God will not permit his own plan to fail. And when God chooses you for a task, no matter how you mess it up, God somehow, works his plan out through your life, because our weakness is made strong in the strength of our wise God. If he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the sheep bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstraked shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle or the sheep ringstraked. And our Jacob is saying here, I don't understand it at all. I don't understand how or why God has been blessing me this way, but it so happens that no matter what Laban does, God seems to turn the thing around and blesses me. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. Is God unjust in this? Was God being unjust with Laban? How can you be unjust in dealing with two people who are out to get each other? Which one do you favor? You see, God sometimes has a problem working with us, doesn't he? He sometimes has a problem answering our prayers. because we are so covetous and so self-centered in what we pray. Certainly, God had a problem in trying to be just with these two men, because no matter what he did, it would have been injustice to one of them or the other, or at least so far as they could understand it. God saw potential here. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived that I lifted up mine eyes and I saw in a dream. Now, he's dreaming here. The Bible, the Old Testament especially, is full of dreaming people. They're always dreaming about something. Jacob had dreamed at Bethel about the angels on the ladder. And now he is dreaming again, probably the second time in his life. We haven't heard about any other dream. But he's dreaming about what he has done. You would think that if he were going to dream about the way he has just treated his uncle Laban, that he would be having a nightmare. But instead, God is in his dream telling him what has really happened that he does not understand. Here again, I point out, God blesses us at times we do not understand why. We certainly cannot figure out why, but God does it in his own grace. I lifted up mine eyes, and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ringstraked, speckled, and grizzled. Now, he knew at once that that was not his doing, because he had arranged it so that all of the spotted and ringstraked cattle, which were his, would be taken off into a different location. And the only cattle left, the only sheep left, were the white ones. But he had arranged that they would have little ones, which would have streaks and spots upon them, which would be his, by putting those limbs which he had torn the bark off in the guttering and the watering troughs. Remember that? But now in his dream, he sees something totally different. What he sees is not white rams and white sheep, which are going to have little black or spotted sheep and lambs because he's arranged it, but he sees that the normal thing of nature is taking place, and the rams are spotted and streaked, and the sheep, the female sheep, are white. So God is telling him what? God is telling him, you didn't have anything to do with this. Your spotted limbs, your streaked limbs, you didn't have anything to do with this. I was in this to protect you and provide for you, but this miracle which you see taking place before your eyes is my doing. And, of course, Jacob is scratching his head in his dream, and he is saying, where did these ring-straked, spotted rams come from? They were not here in the flocks at all. I am puzzled. I thought that my poplar and almond and plain bark trees would do the job. When I read this passage, I think of a neighbor that I had many years ago named Geneva Ford. She was a very sweet country lady, and she used to always talk about things being spottedy and streakedy and checkedy. These were the spottedy and cheekedy, stripedy and checkedy cattle or rams which had bred the white sheep. God's doing. And the angel of God, the same angel that spoke to him at Bethel, the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob, and I said, here I am. This was a theophany, just as much as the appearance of God to Abraham, which we've talked about before, being a theophany. And who was the angel of God? The angel of God was the pre-incarnate Christ, who had appeared here to explain God's doing to Jacob. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see that all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ringstraked and speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban hath done unto you. So the real miracle, the real solution to this mystery, is what God has done and not what Jacob has done. Do you ever have problems in wondering, you know, how did God, through Christ, turn the water into wine? How did Jesus make the blind people see? How did he make the lame people walk? How did he feed 5,000 people with a few loaves of bread and a few fish? And how did he walk upon the water? I cannot understand this. Hamlet once said to Horatio, there are more things in heaven than your philosophy ever dreamed of. We don't understand it all. We never will. God says to us, does the story of the ring-straped and speckled sheep and rams, does that bother you? Does that strain your faith? Does that insult your intelligence? God says to us, do you find it difficult to understand how I could create a world ex nihilo out of nothing? Does that bother you? Do you find it hard to grasp the fact that I could engulf the world with a flood that would destroy every human living being except those I had chosen to be in the ark? Do you find it hard to believe that I could make the sun stand still without the collapse of the galaxy? Does that disturb you? Do you find it hard to understand that I could turn the Nile River into blood, or that I could bring forth a son born of a virgin without a human father? You know, I have the right to create life in any way I choose, with or without speckled rams. Do you find it hard to believe that I could turn the cross into a throne from which the Messiah would rule the world? Do you have a hard time with that? Do you find it difficult that I could raise a man from the dead? Well, as Al Gore said, you ain't seen nothing yet, God was saying to Jacob. If this baffles you, if you can't grasp anything about what I'm doing in this miracle that I'm revealing to you in this dream, you haven't seen anything yet to what I am going to do. Just what is it you don't believe about what you're seeing? I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise and get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. Have you forgotten already, Jacob, my promises to you 40 years ago at Bethel, when you saw the angels on the ladder, and I promised you prosperity, I promised you protection, I promised you provision? Have you forgotten? Yes, Jacob, you have forgotten. This is why this seems mysterious to you. You're not aware of how I'm taking care of you. But I haven't forgotten. I will prosper you. I will protect you. I will bring you back to your father's house. Well, he had made a vow to God at Bethel, and he hadn't lived up to that vow, because since he had been in Haran, in the land of Mesopotamia, he hadn't thought very much about God anymore. Well, occasionally he would use the word, the God of my father, or the God of Abraham, because that was just a part of his vocabulary. He grew up with that. But he didn't think much about God. He hadn't talked to his wives about God. He never shared God with his sons. He never told them the story of Noah and the story of Abraham. These things were the farthest from his mind for 40 years. And now God, in the angel, has approached him suddenly, unexpectedly, in the midst of his covetousness and his greed and his desire to promote himself in business. My wife and I have a son. We have 5 sons and 2 daughters, and we're proud of all of them. We have a son, however, who gives us a great deal of concern. He is a good man, good to his family, works hard, labors hard, takes care of his children, and he has fine children. But when he was a young man, he made a commitment to Christ. And somehow that sort of slipped away across the years, and today he is nearly 50 years old, and he doesn't go to church. Oh, occasionally he'll go to church, but when he does, he always comes back, says the same thing to me. The only thing the preacher ever talks about is money. And his children, one of whom is 20 and now in college, and the other is 16, a girl and a boy, wonderful children, but they grew up without ever going to Sunday school. They never learned anything about God, anything about Jesus Christ. And they're really little pagans, even though they're good children, they're really little pagans. And we worry about him and about his family. Isaac must have worried about Jacob, don't you think? He'd been gone 40 years. Isaac must have many times said to Rebecca, Rebecca, what do you think's happened to our son? We raised him right. We trained him the right way. And he's been gone now for 40 years and we haven't heard a word from him. The only thing we hear are rumors. We hear he's getting rich over there in Mesopotamia. But we don't know what's happened to him. Looks like he'd write us. Looks like he'd call us. Looks like he'd even come to see us, though it's a long way.
What's happened to our son? Then we have another son. One's in the ministry, pastor of a Baptist church. And we have another son who lives down here in Florida. When he was 9 years old, he made a commitment to Jesus Christ. And he's a good boy, too. Always has been. Never been on drugs, never ran around with women, never did those things which young people do so freely today. But when he was 20 years old, he moved to Florida. Came down here to find him a job. He found a good job. And he found a wife, a young Catholic girl. And they married, and they have two children, wonderful children now. And he has a good business. And we were with him just the other day. But you see, something wonderful has happened in his life. He'd been away all those years and drifted away from God. But now, just a few years ago, he and his Catholic wife have come to know Jesus Christ as their Savior. And they're back in the church. That's their life now. And we don't worry about them anymore. Well, God said to Jacob, "Jacob, it's time for you to go back home. It's time for you to go back to your father's house. It's time for you to get back into church. It's time to get your kids in Sunday school." So Jacob prepares to go back home. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, "Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he had sold us, and he hath quite devoured also our money." You see, Leah and Rachel are both fully outdone with their father. They dislike him as much as Jacob dislikes him. Because when they were married, he gave no dowry for either one of them to Jacob, their husband, which was an unforgivable thing. So they say, "Is there anything left for us if we leave? For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, you do. But remember that all of this belongs to us." There was this avaricious gene in their blood which their father had, and which Jacob had, and which Rebekah had. They all had that gene. "Then Jacob rose and set his sons on his wives and camels." Now, I'm sure that is not a literal thing. He didn't set them on their camels because he had been 40 years in Paddan Aram. He was 57 when he left home, so he's 97 years old now. He probably didn't set them on the camels. And he carried away all his cattle or his sheep and all his goods which he had gotten, the sheep of his getting which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. Do you get the picture here? He is getting ready to move. He's getting ready to move. The worst job in the world is moving. And he has accumulated an awful lot of stuff in Mesopotamia. And so he has hired 3 moving trucks, and he has 6 camels with U-Haul trailers behind them. And he is accumulating all of the stuff in his basement and his closet and his attic. He's not throwing away anything. He's carrying it all with him, and he's going back on that long, several hundred mile trip to his father's house. He is going back to Isaac, his father, in the land of Canaan. Well, it just means that he was homesick. He was ready to go home. He was ready to change his life. I've been homesick. Have you ever been homesick? There is no sick in the world like homesick. I was homesick for a while when I first went away to college as a young boy. I've never been in the military, but I hear soldiers talking about how homesick they get out there on the front lines and in the battle. And I recall when I was in Egypt a number of years ago how homesick I got. I think I may have told you about this, but it bears telling again because it's a wonderful story. When I was in Egypt on tour in Cairo, I had gone to the pyramids, and I had gone to the Valley of the Kings, and I had gotten sick with dysentery, and I was shut up in one of those Egyptian third-class hotels, which has no screens on the windows, and it's 120 degrees, and there's no air conditioning, and Egypt, you know, is the El Dorado of flies, and I had dysentery, and I couldn't get out of the bed, and I couldn't pull up the sheet because it was so hot, and I couldn't keep the flies off me, and I was homesick. I wanted to go home. I felt exactly like Jacob felt here. So I understand why, as he progressed with his moving vans that day, he began to sing. He began to sing, "The sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home. 'Tis summer, its time is to be gay. The corn tops ripe and the meadows in the bloom, while the birds make music all the day." You can be homesick with that. "Weep no more, my ladies," he turned to Leon and Rachel and said that. "Weep no more, my ladies, weep no more today. We will sing one song for my old Kentucky home, my old Kentucky home far away." Now, the reason he sang that song is because he didn't know any song about Canaan. But everybody had heard of Stephen Foster. He knew that song. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. These images were the teraphim, as they were called. And the teraphim were the family gods and goddesses. Now, they were not big images sitting out somewhere to worship in a temple, but they were little tiny goddesses, little gods, little figurines of what looked like a fat-bellied human being. And these little teraphim, they would sit on the shelf and they would worship. They would take them with them when they traveled and they would worship these teraphim. And these teraphim, these little gods and goddesses, belonged to the family of Laban. But something has happened here, and Rachel has stolen the teraphim and has taken them with her. And Jacob, when he hears what has happened, he says, "This indeed is the story of my life. Another complication, another problem. Everything goes wrong that I try to do," because he knew that this was going to create real controversy in the house of Laban. You remember years ago there was a show on TV called This Is Your Life with Ralph Edwards. Remember that? And right here, I'm sure that if that show had been on and Jacob had been on that show, he would have seen something like this. He would have heard the voice of Ralph Edwards say to him, "Now I want you to listen and tell me, do you recognize this voice?" And then he heard the voice of his mother. And he said, "Oh yes, that is Rebecca. That is my mother. She is the one who nearly smothered me to death with her possessiveness. She's the one who was partial to me against my brother. That is my mother." And then Ralph Edwards would say, "Do you recognize this voice?" And he would listen, and then he would say, "Well, that's the voice of Esau, my brother. I cheated him a long, long time ago. I stole the birthright from him, and he was so angry he threatened to kill me." "And whose voice is this?" "Oh, that's the voice of Laban, my uncle. I had deceived him, and he has deceived me. The first time it all started was on wedding night when he gave me the wrong woman, the wrong daughter, and I slept with Leah without knowing it, and the next day I was angry." "And do you recognize this voice?" "Why, sure, that's the voice of Rachel. She's a part of my dysfunctional family. I love her as much as anyone could love a wife, but she has been a trial for me all these years. And who is this?" And then he heard the voice of Esau again, and he said, "That's Esau. And I'm on my way home now, and I've got to meet Esau, and I really am scared to death. I'm headed for a big wrestling match." But what he didn't know was he wasn't going to be wrestling with Esau. He was going to be wrestling with God. But being 97, he comforted himself, and he said, "Well, I hear that the first 100 years are the hardest." So he stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all up, and he passed over the river Euphrates, and he set his face toward the Mount Gilead, which was a region of rock, a mountain of rock that separated the Aramean countryside from the Canaanite country. It was the border. And so he was trying to get to the border as he ran from Laban, who was angry with him. This is the part of the scripture from which we get that wonderful thing about. He was trying to get back to his father's house. He was trying to get across the Euphrates and across the Jordan into the wonderful land of Canaan. He was trying to go home where things were different, where he'd be safe from Laban, for Laban couldn't hurt him across the boundary. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and overtook him in the Mount of Gilead. Several years ago, I was coming down to Florida. I wasn't coming to Avon Park, but I was going somewhere in Florida. And I was traveling down I-65, and I noticed that my gas gauge was getting awfully low. And I was approaching the little town of Sparks, Georgia. And I kept saying to myself, if I can just get a little further before this thing runs out. The night was coming on. It was already getting dark, and I had a wife and three little children in my car, and I had no bucket of gas with me. So I kept saying, if I can just pump this thing a little more and get across the hill to the next little town, but I didn't make it. And it chugged out. And I pulled off the road, one of those exits at Sparks, Georgia, and waited until a friend came to help me get gasoline for my car. What happened to me then was exactly what happened to Jacob. He was running. He had been now on 3 days' journey. He was running with all of those vans, those moving vans, and all of those camels and those U-Haul trailers. And he had gotten as far as he could go, and he had run out of gas. And he kept saying to himself, if I can just get over the hill to Gilead, where the Texaco station is, I'll be all right. But he didn't make it, and Laban overtook him. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night, and he said to him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. That's a very strange translation. It's not a very good translation, because if he were going to speak neither good nor bad to him, it meant that they couldn't say anything to each other at all. What it means here, if the word ra in the Hebrew language is interpreted correctly, what it means here is you shall not speak good and then bad. And that's what happens so often at the peace table, you know. We sit down and we start talking about things very kindly and graciously, and then our tempers flare and we get violent. You remember what happened a number of years ago at the UN when Khrushchev beat his chew on the table because he became so angry in the midst of that negotiation for peace among the nations? Well, God says to him, don't let your talk start out peaceful and then become violent. Then Laban overtook Jacob, and Jacob pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. Now that means they were both on the mount of Gilead, but it means that Laban was over on the Aramean side of the peak, and Jacob was on the Canaanite side of the peak of the mountain. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? You have eluded my observation and you have stolen my children. They still belong to me. You have carried them off like war spoils. Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me and didst not tell me that I might have sent them away with mirth and with songs and tabret and harp? He recalls the marriage feast, which was such a glorious affair and lasted probably for a week with eating and drinking and dancing and music. And now Jacob says to him, fat chance that you would have done that for me again. And hast thou not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters? He had 11 grandsons now. These are not sons, these are grandsons. And he had one daughter, Dinah. You have not allowed me to kiss my sons and my daughters, because the daughters and sons of Jacob he assumed belonged to him. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. And that's a fascinating passage in the Hebrew language, because what he's saying is not the translation we have here, in the power of my hand, but he is saying, my hand is my God. No matter what you may think about your God, the God of your father, my hand is my God, and I can do with you as I please. My hand can do you hurt, but the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying to me, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob good and then bad. The God of your father, Laban, is aware. He knew that Jacob was a hypocrite, that Jacob talked about the God of his father, but that Jacob was a hypocrite. My friends, the world can tell. The world can tell. You can't hide that kind of thing from the world. They will find you out. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, which means because I know you want to get home so quickly, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? In the Nuzi excavations, we discovered that in that day, in Mesopotamia, if anyone in the family had the teraphim, the household gods, when the father of the family died, he became the sole inheritor of everything that belonged to the father. So now you begin to understand why Rachel, who was not particularly religious to begin with, why Rachel stole the teraphim, because she knew that the son-in-law, her husband, and she, the daughter, would inherit everything that belonged to her father if they had the gods, the household gods, with them when he died. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee, for Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. Now this is one thing that dastardly Jacob had not done. He was not responsible for this. It was something his wife had done. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into maidservants' tent, and he found them not. And then went he out of Leah's tent, and entered into Rachel's tent, and Rachel had taken the images, and put them in the camel's furniture, which means in the saddle. You know, if you look at the old pictures of the Arabian Nights, you know that the saddles on the camel were leather saddles, and they had a canopy with curtains all around them, and that's where the lady would sit. So she has taken the camel's furniture and sat upon it. And Laban searched all the tent, but he didn't find the images. She said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee. Do not expect me to rise up from my seat on the camel, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched but found not the images. Her explanation is accepted, because he knew that Rachel had grown up in a home where the teraphim, the gods and goddesses, were very sacred, and he knew the last thing she would ever do would be to sit on the gods. And Jacob was wroth, and he chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? That's the stuff that was in the moving vans and the U-Haul trailers. Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of the flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was in the day. The drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. In verses 38 through 40, he reminds him of the last 20 years he has spent working for him, and what an ordeal it was, and how good he had been to Laban. And then in the next few verses, he goes back in history, and he reminds him of the earlier 20 years he worked for him, because he'd worked for him now 40 total years. And he reminds him of what he did in the first 40 years, and the fact that now he needs some consideration from Laban. My time is past, so I'm going to stop, and in the morning we'll start there at verse 38 of chapter 31. Thank you for being here, and have a great day.